Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Captain Remy Skyfire. Hi, Remy. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be back this season.
Absolutely. Congratulations on your promotion to captain. Very exciting.
Thank you. Thank you. When does the raise come in?
We'll talk about that later. We're here to talk about the seventh episode of season eight, Nurse Doctor, which originally aired on October 29th, 1979. Now, normally, we would just jump right into the episode, because this is Remy's second appearance, so we don't have to get into the origin. You can listen to that in her first episode from last season, which was Baby, It's Cold Outside. But I listened back to that episode, Remy, and I have a question that has just been gnawing at me since I listened to it over again, and I have to ask you. I hate to blindside you with this, but I'm choosing to do it.
Okay.
By the way, everybody, I have a cold, so if I sound a little hoarse, that's what's going on. I apologize, anybody. It's kind of gross to listen to, but the show must go on. So anyway, when you were on the show last time, you had said that you had not yet seen every episode of MASH. You were on around season nine because you had sort of watched it for a little bit, and then there was a big break, and then there was another opportunity to catch up with it, and then you were binging it, and then you were watching it with your wife. But you had not seen them all, and I was really envious of that, because obviously I would love to have MASH episodes that I haven't seen yet, but that's never going to happen. So I have to ask, a year and change after we did that episode, have you in fact now seen every episode of the show?
Well, Rob, you see, so about that. No, I have not. Life got a little bit wild in lots of different interesting ways.
Okay.
And so I have not actually gone all the way to the end yet, which I'm still happy about, because there's still so many amazing things for me to experience. But, you know, at this point, it is a little, you know, am I going to finish the show before you finish this podcast? Who can say? Like, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, that's it. Have you gone any further, I guess, since we talked? You were around season nine, I think.
I was. I've progressed into season 10.
So okay.
I guess a season a year is the pace we're keeping.
Wow. You are really doling it out for yourself.
It is one of the most comforting shows in my life right now. And so I think I'm savoring it like one might any kind of special treat. But the thing is that you should actually enjoy the treats instead of just holding on to them forever. So, you know, maybe this is a good kick in the hiney to go back and actually dive in again.
You are showing extraordinary patience and discipline. I would not be able to do anything like that. So, well, I still envy you that. I still envy you the fact that you have seasons, whatever's left of 10 and 11 to get to. And 11, by the way, is one of my personal favorites. I think season 11 is, like, I would argue the best of the later seasons, in my opinion, because I think they knew, well, they did know that the show was ending. And I think they have a slight spring in their step in terms of the episodes, because they knew, like, to kind of savor it because they knew it was ending. So I think season 11 is terrific. Plus, of course, there's the big finale, which you're going to get to. So that's I'm still envious. I'm still envious you have that. That's great. I'm shocked. I'm shocked you were able to show that kind of discipline. That's amazing.
I'm really excited about it. I feel like I haven't heard a lot of my friends talk too in depth about season 11. So you saying that has gotten me like really hype about it. Like I've got so many good things to look forward to besides getting into the finale and bawling my eyes out like 17 times. So that's good.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll check back in when you're on the show next year. So anyway, as I mentioned, we're here to talk about Nurse Doctor. It was written by Cy Rosen, Thad Mumford, and Dan Wilcox, and is directed by the always reliable Charles S. Dubin. Father Mulcahy is busy helping a new nurse, Lieutenant Gail Harris, study to take her medical exams in preparation to become a doctor. During a session OR, we see that Harris's questions about how and why the doctors do the things the way they do them has alienated her from the rest of the staff. When she angers Winchester, it drives Margaret to talk to her afterwards, where she tells Harris that, while she's a superb nurse, her people skills leave something to be desired. Feeling frustrated, she vents later to Father Mulcahy, who bonds with her when he says it's probably because, being something between a nurse and a doctor, people don't know how to treat her, something he can relate to. In an unguarded moment, Harris hugs Father Mulcahy to say thanks, but the hug goes on for too long and it becomes a little awkward. After it's over, Harris is embarrassed, and Father Mulcahy admits that maybe she needs more from him than he can give. When he casually suggests maybe she should stay with one of the doctors, she breaks down in tears and runs out. Mulcahy turns to Hawkeye for advice, and he's worried that he's hurt her feelings, so much so that she may just give up on going to medical school entirely. After finding the whole situation very funny, Hawkeye agrees to talk to her. During a session in OR, Hawkeye is assisted by Harris, and he tries hard to boost her confidence and offer help with her studying. Afterwards, she grows suspicious over Hawkeye's sudden interest and then assumes that Father Mulcahy has told the whole camp about what has happened. Later, in Colonel Potter's office, he calls in Hawkeye, Margaret, and Father Mulcahy to talk about Harris, who came in to ask for an immediate transfer, and giving Potter a not-quite-accurate version of the story. Potter, busy with a crisis over a water shortage at the 477th, doesn't have time for this, so he asks the three of them to straighten it out amongst themselves. Margaret confronts Harris and cuts through Harris's self-pity party, assuming everyone at the 477th hates her, and that's why she's giving up on being a doctor. Margaret tells her that she and Hawkeye will help Harris prepare for her medical exam. With her skills, she really could be a great doctor. And as long as Margaret has anything to say about it, I'm not going to let you back out of it. Harris is, of course, relieved. A couple days later, Harris talks to Father Mulcahy and apologizes for the whole thing. Mulcahy is, of course, sweet and forgiving and congratulates her for resuming her studies. Okay, Remy, so this was on your list of your top three episodes that you wanted to discuss. Knowing, as I do from, again, listening to our episode, how much you you locked onto BJ as your favorite character, I'm a little surprised this was on your top three, considering BJ is almost not in this episode at all. So I'm kind of interested. What was it about before we get into the details, what was it about this one that made it to your list, even though BJ does not figure into it much at all?
Sure. I don't know if this is controversial at all, but I really enjoy Gail's character. I feel like I relate to her in several different ways. I kind of see her as being, you know, neurodivergent in a couple of different ways, which I find really interesting. And so just something about all of that appealed to me and got me excited to talk about it and about her and my thoughts about it. And then I, you know, adore Margaret, and I think that she's great in this episode and gives us some really interesting insight into how her character's developed. And I don't know, it just, I really like it. It's a lot of fun.
Interesting. I would have never thought of it from that angle, the neurodivergent angle necessarily. I, and we'll get to it as we go through scene by scene, but I've always sort of, I took this episode as, by the way, the actress playing Harris is named Alexandra Stoddard. And she mostly went on to a voice career. She has credits on the Smurfs. She played Dazzler on the Pride of the X-Men cartoon, which I did not even know was a thing. I never heard of Pride of the X-Men as the cartoon.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the weirdest credit in her CV is she wrote 5 episodes of The Love Boat, which is very, very unusual for an actor with not a lot of credits behind her to have written an episode of television, let alone 5 episodes of television. That's very, very strange, but nevertheless, those are her credits. I do find Harris to be annoying. I find her to be grating. Her voice is grating, and the way she sort of pitches her voice a little bit. But I always sort of took it as it was more sexism than anything else, because I think if a man doctor was pushing like this, it would be kind of okay. He would be, well, he's striving to be good, but it's because it's a woman, it makes Winchester especially kind of roll his eyes a little bit. Now, maybe I'm being unfair and you're coming at it again from a very different angle, but that's always sort of how he took it. They don't get into that in the episode a whole lot, but I always just sort of felt that was slightly the angle, was that it was okay, it's because she's a nurse and we think of doctors think of the nurses as that's like the women, and she's sort of out trying to push outside her station a little bit. And would that be the case if it was a young man? You know, would that be the way it would look at it? Probably not.
No, absolutely. I 100,000% agree with that. I actually, when I was rewatching this episode to get familiar with it again, I went back and I also rewatched Inga in season 7 because I wanted to see if there was any kind of progression in how, say, Hawkeye interacted with that kind of a character. As I mean, we've seen, and as I'm sure we'll talk about, Charles has absolutely no character development in that regard. But no, for real, like it is totally about the sexism and about, she's just trying to be assertive and get her point across and whatnot. And, sometimes men and male surgeons, especially, perhaps just don't really appreciate that.
And to be fair, in a later episode, which you probably haven't gotten to yet, I'm sorry to be
Oh.
previewing it, but there is a side plot, a B plot in one of a later episode about a male nurse who receives a lot of kind of scorn or derision because he's a male nurse and it's considered women's
Interesting.
work. And and they talk about how he's not even a lieutenant the way all the other female nurses are. He believes reverse sexism. So
Oh.
they do examine that in a later episode, to be fair. So the episode opens up with the side plot, which I mentioned, which is the 477 is running low on water. Hawkeye is getting a quick shower. BJ's about to jump in and get one, and then Klinger announces that the water trucks aren't coming, which means they have to conserve every single drop. So poor BJ doesn't even get to shower, which things are going to get pretty ripe at the 477 pretty quickly. They walk out, the three doctors walk out, and they cross paths with Mulcahy talking to Harris. And I always like that. I always like that when the director makes the effort to just have a nice smooth, as opposed to just cutting. It's like, all right, have them walk by the characters who are engaged in the main plot. And this is the main plot, which is Mulcahy talking to Harris and showing her how to study and things like that. And they're cute. It's nice to see Father Mulcahy getting this much to do. And he talks about, he's like, she thanks him for helping her. And he's like, no, I love it. And he's talked about in previous episodes, he wants to feel useful. And this is right up his alley, especially because I would imagine he's got to be an incredibly patient teacher. So it's really very sweet that they have this little dynamic in the beginning, and we see that how hard she's studying.
No, absolutely. I think it's really interesting how often the series kind of goes against what one might expect of a Catholic priest in this era. Like the fact that a man who's in such a conservative religion during such a conservative time in American history, he's the only one that believes in Gale's ability to actually like tackle the gender norms and achieve her dream. And I feel like they do that a lot with Mulcahy. They like to subvert your expectations of how he might react to certain things. And I don't know, it's one of those situations that I thought that was really nice.
He's a broad-minded individual. You don't necessarily think he might be, but he is, back in the season 5 episode when they're the exorcism, where they're worried about offending him, bringing on the I forget the name, what the term is for that woman who's coming and gonna go like remove all the bad juju from the unit. And he's like, I love to see it. He's like, that's fascinating. And they're shocked that he's willing to do it. So yes, Father Mulcahy, very open-hearted and open-minded, which is always, I think, the hallmark of an intelligent person, is someone who's willing to try new things. So yeah, he's willing to help out like this, and it's really nice. So then we're in the surgery, and we see that Harris starts asking Winchester questions, and we know obviously this has happened before because she asks her first question, and Winchester's like, "What is it now, Harris?" Like he's already completely irritated. And she's being a little insistent, and she's kind of questioning what he does, which is not the smartest tack to take. But at the same time, Winchester, as usual, is just being a dick. I mean, he says, talks about her experience as like a pom-pom girl or something. Like, he's being, really cat talking down to her in a way, and he kind of actually raises his voice at her and stuff like that. So, Harris is not making any friends, and it even leads to Nurse Kelly being catty, where Nurse Kelly goes, and she's assisting Potter. She goes, "Sounds like Nurse Doctor's at it again," which is like, Kelly,
Of all people to be so rude. Like, come on,
what?
Kelly. We expect better from you.
I'm a
You're
little
such a
shocked.
sweetie.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked that she would say that while she's assisting Potter, right? I would think Potter would be like, hey. So it
No,
is
for
one of those
real.
things where Gail is not great at this, but Winchester's just being a complete jerk.
Yeah, like I feel like at this, if Gail had been at any other table, I'm not sure that anyone else would have responded to her in quite that way. And maybe I'm wrong because, as you said, like Kelly makes that comment and Potter doesn't say anything about it. Everyone just kind of lets it lie. But like, I find it interesting that at the end of the scene, Hawkeye ends up kind of standing up for Gale and getting off a pot shot at Charles. And I don't necessarily think it was just to annoy Charles, even though, that is a wonderful benefit for Hawkeye as well. But again, like coming from watching Inga and seeing how Hawkeye had had his ego thoroughly bruised in any number of ways by her, and maybe perhaps learned a lesson from that, it was just interesting for me to see him kind of take that side.
Yeah, we'll get to it. He's incredibly genial in this episode, Hawkeye. He's about as nice. He's about as far removed from the malcontent Hawkeye of the first season as imaginable here. He's like incredibly avuncular, except for one moment, which we'll talk about. So after surgery, Harris is talking to Margaret, and Margaret's, I don't know. I think Margaret's not being the best manager in the world, where she's like, you seem determined to alienate people. And she says, who have I alienated? Practically everybody. And then she says, when I draw up the duty rosters, some of the nurses specifically request to not be assigned with you. I don't know if that's what a manager should tell somebody. I don't know. Am I being unfair to
That's not
Margaret?
good for morale. I don't know. Like, I don't quite. I agree. I don't think that was quite the best move. But like, we know that Margaret is really hard in a lot of circumstances. I've actually seen people say that they think Margaret is being super hypocritical in this scene and in a later scene, given her experiences back in the season five episode, The Nurses, where, Margaret is making all of these big statements about her alienating people and whatnot, whereas she was in the situation of being alienated at one point because of her own actions. I don't necessarily think it's hypocritical. We can get more into that maybe a little later on, but I do find it interesting, again, that she had that experience and then she's watching Gail here do something kind of similar in her own way. I feel like, well, Gail kind of alienates people because of her desire to like use her knowledge to make everything as perfect as possible. I feel like Margaret kind of does the same thing. It's a lot more driven by her army brat upbringing, but at the end of the day, she wants to run the most perfect ship possible. So I feel like they kind of have that in common, even though I don't know if Margaret would like to hear that. So I don't know. I really enjoy their interactions in this episode for that reason.
I like when Margaret says, look, you've only got another 6 weeks here, and Gail goes seven. And and Margaret
She's
rolls her
done with
eyes
it.
like, that's now that you've pointed it out, that is maybe sort of the neurodivergent thing, right? Where she doesn't understand, like, it that doesn't matter. That's a meaningless
Yeah, like
mistake. So who
to
cares?
her, it makes to Gail, it makes perfect sense to bring it up because, like, oh no, you didn't say the right thing. Like, she She has this inability to stop correcting people. She's very overly honest in a lot of ways. She doesn't hold very much back. She's just super awkward in a lot of social situations. Like she reads very, I don't know, you could read her in a bunch of different ways. I kind of see her a little bit on the autistic spectrum, perhaps, just in that way of not really knowing. Like everybody else seems to have it figured out and it's so easy for them. And she's just like, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. I don't understand why this is so upsetting, but okay.
We do know that Margaret's tolerance for anybody upsetting the apple cart of the nursing staff is very low. So anyone coming in, and she says your nursing skills are some among the best I've ever seen, but you go a long way with you have a long way to go learning how to work with people. And then Gail talks about part of the problem is she says, ever since I've decided to resign my commission and become a doctor, other nurses treat me like I was some sort of traitor or something. And I never want to criticize the show too heavily because it had 24 minutes to tell a lot of story. It might have been nice to have one scene where we see the nurses doing that. Now maybe we get a hint of that with the Kelly snipe, but I don't know. It might have just been nice to have 30 seconds of her in the tent with the other nurses, and we see that she's not just making it up because we have to take her word for it. That that's what's going on. And so and she's the new character. We've spent 8 seasons with Kelly and Bigelow and all the Baker, and they're nice people. And we're like, well, all of a sudden they're like super catty. It's entirely possible because we just saw Kelly be that way. But it just would have been nice maybe to have just a little touch of that and to for us to see that Gail's not just completely imagining it.
No, I absolutely agree with that. They usually, I feel like MASH is pretty good about, I mean, talking about like how the scene transitions into Gail and Mulcahy at the beginning and whatnot. Like MASH is really good at showing that kind of constant life going on in the background. Like there's never any doubt that this is a thriving place. And so it really doesn't feel like it would have been too difficult to, yeah, even just 30 seconds of her at the end of OR or whatever else, getting out of the scrubs and the mask and whatnot, and just a couple of nurses making a stray comment or two. Like it wouldn't have taken long. It's a
No,
shame.
but so anyway, they have a longer scene, and she kind of keeps interrupting. That's the thing. Gail doesn't know when to stop. She kind of just keeps arguing her case, and Margaret, we see, gets more and more irritated, and that's she storms off, and that's where we leave it. So then we're back into the mess tent, and we see that all the food, of course, is being cooked in milk because they don't have water, and so all the food is even more disgusting than it normally is, because we see it getting scooped onto Hawkeye's tray, and it's all, white and gloppy. And there's creamed peas, creamed turnips. Hawkeye has his eyes shut because he can't stand to look at it. BJ's describing, and then they mention creamed beets, which is just absolutely. I do you like beets?
No, I'm
No,
struggling just
yeah.
listening to this. This
I
is
do not
terrible.
either. It makes my stomach turn. And I will tell a brief little side story. Just a couple of months ago, my wife and I were having a dinner with some friends, actually, Corey Drew, for a guest of the show this season, and his wife. And we went to this restaurant. And living here in Florida, there's not as many resources for vegetarians as in other states. So I'm always sort of surprised when somebody restaurant has something. And they had vegan steak. And I thought, well, what is a vegan steak? Okay. And I just decided, well, I'm going to order that because I have Impossible brand stuff all the time. I'm like, okay, I'll order that. And I ordered it, and I said to the waitress, just double checking. That's vegetarian, like I didn't misread that, right? And she goes, yeah. And then she starts to walk away and then turns back and says, it's made from beets.
No.
And
Oh
I
no.
was like, oh no, why did you tell me that? Because so I ordered it and I got it, And it actually didn't taste that bad, but I could not get the idea that it was made from beets out of my mind. And so it threw off my
Oh,
enjoyment
God.
because it had all the accoutrement, it came in like a nice roll and all this stuff. But it was just like, I wish you hadn't told me it was made of beets. You could have just said, yes, it's vegan, trust us. And I would have trusted you. But knowing it was made from beets, I was like, I'm never going to order this again. This is kind of disgusting.
Oh, that's awful. The human brain really just loves to kick us in the pants sometimes. It's just super great.
So, and they tried. So, Hawkeye and BJ are complaining about all the creamed food and cream of weenie, which is
Ugh.
it's so absolutely disgusting. And Potter is trying to kind of say, come on, guys, don't complain too much or whatever. This is not that big a deal. And of course, it's not getting anywhere with them because the food just looks absolutely disgusting. Because it looks like vomit. I'm sorry, I don't want to be too graphic, but everything's just goopy and whatever. And Hawkeye and BJ talk about maybe going into the post op as patients because they could get water as patients and stuff like that. So then the other side plot is they sit down with Winchester, and Winchester is freshly groomed. He smells great, and his hair's been washed. And Winchester's like, "What are you talking about? I don't know, and then he too, of course, Winchester can't help himself where he leaves and he says, "Anyone want my milk? I'm not thirsty." And this is one of those things where Winchester wants to be a dick, and that's what's going to get him caught. Like, he could just get away with this if he just didn't have the need to rub it in their faces. But
No,
he
like,
has to because that's
yeah.
who he is.
The fact that he walks away whistling always makes me laugh. One of my favorite MASH episodes, for whatever reason, is The Merchant of Korea, where they all play poker with Charles
He's got the
for the
tell,
first time. And he's got that tell where, whenever he's whistling and whatnot, he's bluffing. And I'm like, that's interesting that you decided to pull that into your character in this moment. Okay.
I like that he's that immature. He has to
Yes.
wave the red cape in front of them, asking to be caught. I mean, he could just get up and walk away, but no, he has to do it. So okay. So then later on, we rejoin Mulcahy and Harris. There's a nice detail where sitting in front of them are two glasses of milk. I think that's a nice detail
I
that
love
they thought
it.
about that. Like, oh yeah, everybody just has to drink milk.
Yeah,
And
there's milk
Gay.
everywhere
There's
in
milk
this
everywhere.
episode. It's so good.
And Gail is kind of giving in. She gets something wrong and she doesn't want to. She's like, let's just quit. And Mulcahy is sort of like, why are you being this way? Why are you being so, come on, let's keep trying. And he makes her laugh by talking about that he had a relative that went to medical school and gave it up and decided to become a mortician. And he's like, I just said, I just wanted to see you smile. Now, I know this is the way television is staged because you have a limited amount of space and there is a limited amount of light sources in a tent. You've only got a lamp or maybe a candle to work from, but they really are sitting right on top of one another practically. I for someone who if you most people would not sit that close to someone that they are not intimately familiar with. They are like literally shoulder to shoulder. So, Mulcahy has to, he can't possibly think that Gail thinks anything else other than the reality because she knows he's a priest. At the same time, it's like, I don't know, maybe sit in another chair like a foot away. I don't know.
It's even worse when you're watching the HD versions of it, where the aspect ratio has been completely changed, and you're like, there are feet of space on either side of you that you could just scoot over to, but no, apparently not.
Like they must be touching thighs down below the table. I mean, for God's sakes,
Exactly. But he seems completely unaffected by it for, there could be any number of reasons for that I could or could not go into. But I love the conversation that they have about, like, we get this peek into the fact that the reason that Mulcahy kind of feels this kinship with her is because he also understands how it feels to be alienated by the other members of the camp. And it's not even done in a malicious way necessarily, just, there's a common Christian phrase, which is be in the world, not of the world. You're meant to live among others, but not be led astray by like their sins or incompatible values or whatnot. So obviously he's well aware of that command. But it doesn't change the fact that he's so lonely. And I guess that might be part of why he felt that level of compassion for Gale in the first place. Like he understands what it feels like to be on the outside looking in because of just something indelible about you, and I don't know. I find that interesting.
Yeah, I like the way he talks about where he says that everyone says, present company accepted father or hello father, no, never just hi. It's always underscoring that he is who he is, which obviously is meant as a gesture of respect. But yes, it can be, I would imagine, being alienating. You're the only person in the unit that is like that. And so he talks about his full name, Father John Patrick Mulcahy, and she says, "That's much too stuffy. I like Johnny." And he says, "Oh, that's funny. My mother called me Johnny, and she was." And then he says, "She was a woman too."
What does that line mean, Father? What is, I literally have that written down in my notes, and I just said, Father, what the heck is that line? What are you trying to
Is a
say?
little like, huh?
He's just, man, he does not know how to interact with women in so many different ways, and it's very funny. Bless his little heart. He's doing his best.
In the grand annal of hot priests in fiction, there's the and you, this is you, there was Richard Chamberlain in The Thornbirds, which was a miniseries in the 80s about a priest who befriends this woman, Rachel Ward, and of course she becomes attracted to him, and it's forbidden love because he's a priest or whatever. And he was at, for people of my vintage, he was like the example of hot priest. Because that was what that whole story was about. More recently, I guess Fleabag on that show, you had that actor that falls in love with Phoebe Waller-Bridge falls in love with the priest in that show. And I don't think most people think of William Christopher in that regard, but that he's not flirting with her. He's not flirting,
He's not.
but
I am.
it's a weird thing to say. It's a weird thing to say. She was a woman too. Okay.
Thank you
All
for
right.
sharing that with the class. We
Yeah.
appreciate it.
Okay, Father Johnny. All right. And that's what leads her to reach across and give him a big hug. And although she is talking about his mother, which is like the least sexy thing imaginable. and then he's like, "Well, I'm here to help." And then I kind of like that the shot holds on Mulcahy. And we don't see Gail's face, and we kind of see her head kind of like nuzzle him a little bit.
She's super cozy in this moment. This is great. Finally, she feels like she's not alone. She feels seen. It's all gonna be great. And then, the shoe drops, which is poor thing. No, I love that look at his face. Like he's so good at just, I don't know, just kind of ratcheting up the awkwardness just a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
Just it poor thing.
And then he really blows it by making her feel bad because she says, "Oh, I guess I cared more than I thought I did." And then he immediately goes to, "Perhaps it would be best if you studied with one of the doctors." That's just the absolute wrong thing. And again, you can't blame the guy for not having any game because he doesn't need to have game because he's a priest. But that's a horrible. He's also supposed to be a counselor, and that's a, he should know that that is a terrible thing to say in that moment because,
They just had a conversation about how alienated,
yeah.
she feels, and he's like, it would be a really great thing to do in this moment of your low self-confidence. Why don't I just take a bazooka to that level of trust we just had and blow it sky high? I think that would be really cool and winning and awesome.
Yeah, he really. He that is you watch and you go, "Oh no, don't say that. You should have just kept going and let it simmer down and you know, whatever. Or like I said, maybe keep your distance. You know, maybe next for the next session, one of you sits on the bunk and the other one sits at the table or something. Or maybe rehearse in the mess tent as opposed to, you know, your tent. But anyway, so she gets up, she grabs her books, and she's kind of tearful, and she says, "I'm sorry, pause, father," which is a
Ugh.
great button on the scene, right? It's a great way to, you know, a kind of a reminder of the, and then he takes his glasses off and he kind of looks sort of stunned, and then that's our act break. So, you know, quite a conundrum here. So now we come back, and Hawkeye is doing some sort of, like, I don't know what he's like, talking to a guy with a Jeep and a clipboard. I don't know what the hell Hawkeye is
Like,
doing.
Hawkeye, are you doing inventory on like the Jeeps? You're
Yeah,
a
what is,
surgeon?
like, doesn't he
Okay.
have enough to do? Like, what is, very, very strange. But anyway, he's outside, and Mulcahy comes. And he says, "I have some advice on a personal matter." And Hawkeye's kind of like, "What?" And then he says, No, this is something you're much more qualified than I." And Hawkeye's like, "Oh, something medical." No, not something medical. Okay, all right. And, you know, Hawkeye's kind of like, "What, you know, what else am I possibly better at than this?" And so finally, Mulcahy starts getting into the details of that. And then he mentions, he says, "Last night, I had to give a girl the brush off."
Can we just talk about Hawkeye's incredible face journey that happens as soon as he did that? Like, I love Alan Alda's face in the first place, but he's just, it is so incredible to watch the way that about a billion thoughts pass in front of his face all at once. I love it. It's great.
They really do hold on it, because he looks away and then he looks back. And he looks away again, and he just is like, "What?" And they hold on it way longer than I think a TV show would do today, which is funny. And then he says, "Would you mind repeating that again?" And then you know, when, of course, he finds this all very, very funny, and Mulcahy doesn't find this funny. And then he lets it slip that he's talking about Harris, and then Hawkeye says, "Gail Harris, as in nurse of my dreams."
Yes.
I don't like that line, because we're getting to a point on the show where the age difference between Hawkeye and some of the nurses is getting big. And to me,
Interesting.
Harris looks very young, much younger than Nurse Baker or Nurse Bigelow or even Nurse Kelly look a little more like his contemporaries. She, to me, seems a good 5, 6 years young. It just feels a little, I don't know, this feels a little icky to me, the age difference there.
It doesn't help that, you know, we're in the eighth season of the second year, maybe, of the war. And it's just,
Yeah.
you're finally starting to see like all of those gray hairs are coming out and they're very, you know, attractive and dashing and all of that. But also, yeah, it does kind of put that into perspective. Though, I mean, I guess Hawkeye's always been a little bit of a pervert, like all the way back to Welcome to Korea, where BJ's talking about like his babysitter Norma Jean.
18, 16. Oof.
Ooh, yeah, no. I don't know. I do love here that one of my favorite things throughout the show is how often Hawkeye and Mulcahy will find each other during like their lowest or most uncertain moments, which is just fascinating. Like, they should be polar opposites in every way. They should be oil and water. Like, Hawkeye is agnostic. He hedonistically enjoys every possible pleasure of the flesh. But because neither of them judge each other for their life decisions or values, they end up actually meeting on equal footing all the time. And like, this is one of those moments where it's a little more comedic that Mulcahy goes to him, but you know, there's just this trend in so many other situations, like Dear Sis, or you know, in a situation in a season when we get to letters and whatnot. Like, I love how they gravitate toward each other when they should be the last possible person that they should go to.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great observation. But yeah, they find each other on the on water finds a level kind of thing, and they find each other in a weird way, even though they're coming at things from a very, very different perspective. One other thing I want to mention is props to Charles Dubin for setting this in the setting that he did, because this is like a there he's Hawkeye is sitting on some crates in front of what looks like a Quonset hut. And I'm guessing I don't know what that building is. We've never really seen it because it's slightly rounded. It's not a square building. I don't know what it's. Is it the always movable supply shed? We don't know what it is. But we've never seen an episode where it has this setting. And I mean, it would have been very easy to just shoot this in the swamp, or in the mess tent, or anywhere. Right, but instead we're outside. I mean, shooting something outside on the at the ranch, certainly a little more difficult because you got to contend with weather. California weather's pretty stable, but nevertheless, there are more variables than just doing it on an inside set. So it was just nice. It just gives this a visual. Like this is if you see this scene, you know that it's from this episode because there's no other episode that looks like this, that has this particular setting. So
Yeah,
this go
it really gives the impression that like Mulcahy was waiting for the exact right moment when Hawkeye was super isolated and like at
Yes,
the edge of the
yes.
camp. Like he planned this out when he was going to actually find him. And it's probably good because of the hyena laughing fit that Hawkeye has and whatnot, which I love Alan Alda's laugh. It's so good. Like Mulcahy tried at least to get a little bit of privacy, bless his heart.
That's true. That's a great point, right? Because they are kind of like further away from everybody else, kind of. They're kind of further on the further ends of the camp. That's something where nobody was ever going to hear this. And so he mentions, "I was on the victim on the receiving end of a rather ardent embrace," and he's dancing around all these terms. And Hawkeye's like, "What?" And then she says, "She hugged the stuffing out of me," which again, Hawkeye finds incredibly funny. And as you say, Alan Alda's a great laugher. Sometimes it's hard to fake laugh, obviously, but Alan Alda is always really good at it, and Hawkeye just finds this all incredibly funny. And how can it not be? Especially the way Mulcahy puts it. He puts it in the most silly way imaginable,
I do need to say that, like there is an incredible possibility that Mulcahy is actually just a gay man, right? Like he seems to have absolutely no concept of like we were talking about in the tent with him sitting so close to Gale that they're basically touching and all of this, like his awkwardness with communicating with a woman, like it would be so easy for a man to decide to go into the priesthood because being celibate in terms of women is not going to be a problem. Like that's just going to be easy to deal with. I don't know. This is one of those episodes where there's so many different ways that Bill Christopher decided to play Mulcahy that I find very interesting. And this is one of those episodes where sometimes I just look at it and I'm like, that, I mean, you can't say that this is an impossibility. Like maybe it's not the way that you would choose to think about the character, but he is really awkward in a very specific way and has no idea what he's doing. And I don't know, just so interesting to me.
It does seem like, has he never spent any time around women, any women at all,
Well,
ever?
he has a sister that he's very close with. Like you'd
Yes.
think that he would
Yeah.
be used to interacting with them, but no, this is just a little strange.
Yeah, he's pretty hopeless. And so, Hawkeye tries to comfort Mulcahy and says, look, you can't blame yourself because she has to know that you're spoken for. And then, of course, he's got to. He can't help himself, and he's like, she's I'll try and help her out. Of course, it's gonna be tough, getting her to talk a girl on the rebound like that, and he's just digging the knife in further on Mulcahy, poor Mulcahy. And so then we go to OR, and we see that Gale is helping out Hawkeye, and he. All of a sudden, he kind of overdoes it because then he's sort of like, fascinated by, oh, I can help you study and doing it. He's making all these jokes, and all this kind of stuff. And she immediately picks up on it, like, well, wait a minute, why all of a sudden are you interested about all this? And so, you know, he's obviously, if Gale is sensitive that the word is getting around, Hawkeye's not doing the best job of coming off super subtle about it. But, you
Oh,
know,
no.
man, he's doing his best.
Subtlety is definitely Hawkeye Pierce's middle name for sure. Though I do like I really like how I mean, yeah, he's being a bit over the top in OR, like he's just I mean, he's being himself, really. But he's also really patient with her and like easy with his praise. And I know that it keeps being implied that it's because he's like wildly attracted to her or something, which again, fascinating after his experience with Inga. Like maybe now he likes very assertive, mouthy women in very, you know, specific ways, which just curious. But like one of the things that happens is that he asks her to close the
Yes.
peritoneum. Which, like, we know it's a standard thing in this MASH unit for the nurse to like close the skin after the surgeon so that they can quickly move on to another patient. But the peritoneum, like, that's something completely different. That's like a the membrane that lines the abdominal cavity. It is very much not common for a surgeon to have a nurse close that. Like, it's I don't know, it's much more difficult work. So it just seems like a huge display of trust for him to give her, and then for Margaret to come right around and give her praise right after it. Like it's just, you know, you get this feeling that like, wow, you know, they're gonna start this like mentoring relationship. She's gonna go off and be a great doctor, and then if, you know, Hawkeye just has to put his foot in his mouth like he always does, and you know, what else would we expect at this point, I guess?
Yeah, because it's after surgery is when they start talking, and he offers to help her out, and she says no, and he keeps pushing, and it's another one of those, like, you know, all right, maybe. And then she kind of turns on him and she's like, "Doctor, why the sudden interest in helping me study?" And that's where Gail is not the easiest person to get along with, because she's sort of pissy about it. You know, I mean, she's sensitive that, okay, he is talking, but you know, he is just trying to help. And then she immediately is like, "He told you, didn't he?" And then she says, "You know, I've made a complete fool of myself. Do I have to tell the whole camp?" And Hawkeye's like, he didn't tell the whole camp. He just told me he was trying to help you. And then she storms off and says, "You know, I thought Priest took a vow of silence." And you know, like, okay. And then he keeps trying. Hawkeye keeps trying, and then she starts screaming, "Why don't you leave me alone? Why doesn't everybody just leave me alone?" Which is like, all right,
She
Gail,
is
lighten
going
up.
through it.
Yeah.
Like, come on, sweetie. Like, I don't know, maybe she's never been felt rejected by a man before. Maybe it's because it's like to her, that was her one ally in the camp. And now, of all people, he's told Hawkeye Pierce, who probably she thinks just can't keep a secret to save his life in the first place, because it just doesn't occur to him not to be running his mouth at all hours of the day. But yeah, no, she just got, bless her heart, like not to be Southern, you know, not to be raised in the South, but bless her little pea pig in heart. She just, throws an absolute tantrum.
I like that they were willing to make her be a little unpleasant. It makes it, you know, makes it harder to swallow, as opposed to just sort of making, oh, everyone's picking her. No, she is a little unpleasant. Okay, I gotta get it. So
She's kind of
she's
abrasive.
yeah. So she storms off, and then we have a scene with Klinger where they're talking about the water supply for a second, and then Hawkeye, Margaret, and Mulcahy come into the Potter's office, and Potter mentions, and he says, "Look, I'm a very busy man. I've got all this stuff to do. We have to make this short and sweet. Harris dropped by earlier. She had a little surprise for me." He says she wants for an immediate transfer, and he talked to me. And he says, "You know, I assumed it's because she couldn't take a bath." And he says, "No, that's not it." And he says, "Well, then what's the reason?" "Well, it's because they had an unhappy love affair." Or he says, "I made a damn fool of myself and the whole camp knows it." And he goes, "Well, I don't know it." So I love the idea that in a modern parlance, Potter is not on social media, right?
No.
He's just completely He's out of the scrum of the goings on at the hospital that are not hospital related. And so I love that. I love that somebody he's if Potter would exist, he would not be on social media today. He would just be reading his books and just living his life, and I admire that.
Yeah, just off riding his horses and things like that. We
Exactly.
could all learn a thing or two from him. No,
Agreed.
I absolutely adore Harry Morgan's entire pacing and delivery of this scene. It cracks me up every single time. Like, it is just he's so good, and then getting around to the end of it, just him telling them all, you stop talking about her, you stop hating her, and you stop dating her.
Yeah,
It is
it's such a great, yeah.
perfect.
And I loved it when he says, apparently she's so upset she's not going to go to med school anymore. I didn't even know she was going to med school.
He's just stuck in this office all day. Like, someone needs to come and have a conversation with him at least once. Come on.
So I love, and I also love, there's a great little bit of physical business where every says, the head nurse hates me. And she says, I do not hate her. He says, back up a bit. What did you do that's got everyone's tongue wagging except mine? And she said, oh, I had an unhappy love affair. Was it with one of my doctors? No, it was with your priest. And I love that as soon as he says that, Margaret just looks at Mulcahy. Loretta Swit doesn't just turn her neck. She turns her whole body like 90 degrees. She like just swivel like almost 10 hut. Kind of around, and she just was like, and looking at Mulcahy as he's trying to explain. I just love her, like, what? It's a great little bit of physical business on Loretta Swit's part. This is
Yes.
great.
Oh,
So,
it's so good.
yeah, and it does end with that great, you stop hating her, you stop talking about her, you stop hating her, and you stop dating her, which is just absolute perfect way to end the scene, right? And just get right out of it. This is absolutely perfect. So then we follow up with the Winchester, not storyline, but a little bit of the bit where their Hawkeye and BJ are having to share one little puddle of water to shave. Winchester comes in and he's fully bathed and scrubbed and everything, and they find that his towel is damp, and they're like, what's going on here? So obviously there's more to that story. Then we get a scene with Harris and Margaret in Margaret's tent. And I think there's something very specific about where they set this. Because obviously she thinks, all right, Father Mulcahy is going to, I mean, excuse me, Margaret's going to lower the boom on me. And, she says, what a surprise to find out that I hate you. And Gail says, well, don't you? Doesn't everybody here? Gail, lighten up. And Margaret even mocks, oh, everybody hates me. But I think Margaret having this moment with Gail in her tent is Margaret's attempt at lowering the temperature a little bit. Now, I know that they get at it a little bit and whatever, but I don't know. Instead of having it on the compound or having it in Margaret's tent where it's got all of Margaret's accoutrement, her red drapes, and all of her, I just think it's meant to make Gail feel a little more relaxed, even though the conversation starts off again on the wrong foot.
No, absolutely. Margaret has like the coziest, homiest tent in the entire camp. Like, you can
Yeah, she
really
does.
tell that she spent so much of her childhood and adolescence moving all over the place because she knows how to make a home wherever she is at. That's just her army brat upbringing. And it is also, like, we occasionally get little peeks into other nurses' tents, and they are not quite so. I mean, obviously, they're shoving like four of them into one tent. They don't
Yeah.
have a whole lot of room to decorate, but it is still like it's a very soft and feminine atmosphere. Like I love Margaret. Like, she's being very firm with Gail because she cares. It's difficult for Margaret to care softly with someone. Like, she cares with the intensity of a hurricane. Like, she does not, she craves softness and, winsomeness and all of that so much, and it's just not quite what she offers most of the time. Like, she, of course, they get off on the wrong foot immediately because that's how she's used to doing things. And then she has to come around and actually show why she's being that way, of course.
It said it doesn't start well, but again, I just think by setting it here, it's trying to make Gail a little more at ease. And then she finally lowers the boom on her in a good way, where she's like, in between your nursing shifts, Captain Pierce and I are going to help you train for your medical exam. And she's sort of shocked, and she says, I know what you're going through, and the army is no help, which is a nice admission on her part, right? She's so pro-army. But I like that she's willing to say, look, I know the army's not going to help you with this, but she's like, with your background and your talent, you've got a real chance. And she says, and I, for one, I'm not going to, as your superior officer, I'm not going to let you back out. And it's great. It's a great scene. Great scene for Margaret. And finally, Gail, lightens up a little, and she says, no questions made, you're dismissed. And then, so it's, as you say, Margaret comes at it with the force of a hurricane, but at least we get to the good spot.
Yeah, no, I really love how, I mean, this is just me being a writer and thinking about characters way too in depth and all of that fun stuff. Like, I know how prideful Margaret is in her nursing abilities and like how hard she's fought to get to where she is, but scenes like this really just make me like to kind of daydream about Margaret after the war. Like, what if Margaret, after having these experiences, like, what if she pursued medical school? What if she became Dr. Houlihan? Wouldn't that be interesting? And just, I don't know, like, she has a lot of these experiences with these female figures who are kind of reaching outside the bounds of gender norms, just like she always has had to do. I don't know. I think it would be interesting for her character. Just fun thought experiment.
Absolutely. So then we catch up with Hawkeye and BJ and Winchester. He's in the shower. And he's singing, and he's making it sound like he's, like he's actually getting a shower. Hawkeye comes in, and he tries to turn on the spigot, and no water comes out. And they're like, "What the hell's going on here?" And then BJ starts rubbing it on his arms, and he's like, "This stuff is he says, and then Winchester says, "This isn't actually water." And BJ goes, "No, of course you have a pet lake. You have a pet lake." And then they realize this stuff tingles. It's soda. And Winchester says, it's imported Vichy water sent by my mother, my personal stock. And so that's what he's been scrubbing with. And the Hawkeye and BJ are like, well, this is great. We're going to share this with everybody in the camp. And Winchester says, this is your hurricane. I'm down to my last bottle. He grabs it. And of course, BJ immediately grabs it out of his hand. They run out outside the tent. Winchester comes out of the shower stall with naked, and everyone is out there waiting for him. Now, again, what Winchester's doing, he's being a big jerk because he's rubbing it in their faces. I also kind of don't like the way Hawkeye and BJ stand out there and they waste it by pouring it over themselves. And BJ's like, come on out, the water's fine. I'm like, I don't, you guys are kind of being jerks too. I don't know. Everyone's at fault here.
And you're standing in front of everybody and you're pouring this last bottle of water just all over you and on the ground and wasting it. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I don't
No.
know. It's just
I do love that. I mean, I want to know what Charles was expecting to happen. Like, he's literally in there singing at the top of his lungs while he's like, do people think he's just in there training for the opera? Like, does the
Right,
shower tent get better acoustics or something? Like, it just, I don't know what he was expecting unless he was like, yeah, you know what? It is my last bottle. I don't care. Like, I'm really gonna give into the experience of having a shower, I guess. But I don't know, man. What was your plan here?
Yeah, right. He couldn't possibly be surprised if people are tipped onto what he's doing, as he's making so much damn noise about it, for Pete's sakes. But okay, all right, fine. So then we catch up with Gail and Mulcahy and the mess tent, And Hawkeye is saying, what are you doing? You should be studying. And Gail's like, I'm just taking a minor break. And we see that obviously everything has calmed down a little bit. And then Gail gets up, go back to work. And Hawkeye says, I need some advice. I've got some stuffing that's just aching to be hugged. And Mulcahy says, well, some guys got it and some guys don't.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. I do think it's interesting in this scene, right? Like part of the reason we can see that they've squashed everything, they feel comfortable with each other again is that, Mulcahy asks for Dawn to call him John, but when she leaves the table, she still says by father. And I find that like you could argue that she's doing that because Hawkeye's there and she doesn't want to start the gossip all over again, but like it feels, it could be a little bittersweet in a way because he just invited her to, drop that wall a little bit again and to be that same level of comfort with each other. And instead, at the end, that veil is still in place, like regardless. It's interesting.
And I didn't even think about that. I don't think I've ever even occurred to me that, yeah, she does call him father. I do think it's because they're in a public space, and they just don't want it to seem a little too intimate with one another that she has like a little nickname for him. So Hawkeye, and then when Mulcahy says that little line about some guys have it, some guys didn't, Hawkeye does a little like Nick sort of like noogie on his on him when on Mulcahy's chin, and I think about just how. Like I mentioned earlier, how genial Hawkeye is, like how avuncular, how fatherlike. And it's amazing to think how far he's come from the lecherous creep of the first season that he's so all like all the edges have been sort of sanded off of Hawkeye over the 8 seasons. And now he's this kind of version. And there's a lot to be mined here, but it just, this epi this is one of the episodes I think about when, one of the writers from MASH, either Everett Greenbaum or Jim Fritzell, one of that pair, they later on had a criticism of the later seasons of MASH where they said everyone became too damn nice to one another. And I feel like this is kind of one of those episodes where, yeah, there's this minor conflict with Gail, but it's all kind of patched over very quickly. And I don't know. There's just the kind of Hawkeye's just so safe as a character here. And, that's okay. It's other episodes. He gets to be more of a malcontent, but it's just kind of funny to think how dangerous he was considered to be as a character in the early seasons, and now he is about as warm and cuddly as he possibly could be.
No, absolutely. I feel like I might have mentioned it in my last episode, like the progression of Hawkeye's flirting going from the early seasons when he's very aggressive and he does not take no for an answer in a lot of situations to when you start getting into these later seasons, it's almost like he's flirting like just for enrichment. Like he's not actually expecting anything to come of it. It's just everybody expect like he's Hawkeye Pierce. That's what he does, obviously. But it's so toothless. Yeah, like he's lost that edge in a lot of ways. And it's like, I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to read Hawkeye. An interesting read that I've seen for him talks about like the possibility of reading him as having bipolar disorder. And in a way, that is interesting to think about with this episode, because if you were to read him that way, he is very manic and he is having just nothing is wrong in the world. Everything is beautiful and great and super cool, and it's not gonna get him down in any way. He's not gonna get annoyed, he's not gonna get impatient. Like even the whole subplot with Winchester, like he and BJ, they don't do anything to prank him. They don't lash out in any way. It's just, yeah, you're right. Like he's so congenial. And maybe that is why he has all the stuffing that needs to be hugged. He has just turned into a teddy bear and he needs to get it all squeezed out of him.
And that is more of Alan Alda's personality, what we know of him. He's just a genial guy, and so he, I think Hawkeye moved closer to Alan Alda than Alan Alda moved closer to Hawkeye over these years. And so, again, in other episodes, they would go in other directions, but this one he's so friendly and so warm. And so anyway, that's the end of the main episode, and then we come back for the little button scene where Klinger finally gets something to do. He's basically Jamie Farr, very little, very few scenes in this episode. He talks about that the water tanks have been refilled, and he says, "Okay, we're going to do an orderly plan to everyone to start getting showers." And he really makes a meal of this, Jamie Farr, and he's very funny with his he's got his paperwork, and he's got a cigar that he's gesticulating with, and he's like, "I will read a list of names in alphabetical order. You will proceed to the shower in 5-minute intervals," and he's being very, very specific, and he's really kind of enjoying being the guy in charge of this. And then he finally says, in orderly fashion, and he says, "Abrams, 1730 to 1735." And then we get the very rare bit of, I think, handheld camera work in
Yes.
MASH. It's kind of a fun scene from Charles Dubin to put together and his cameraman to put together, where the camera shakes a little and we see everyone storm up and cover him. And they, first of all, they're running towards the camera, then they're running from the camera. And it's just not a shot that we typically see in MASH.
Yeah. Just absolutely wild stampede. No, I was thinking about that when I watched the episode. Just it's so fun to watch all of the background extras and how they choose to kind of like engage with the stampede scene.
Yeah.
No, it's really interesting. I love that they ended it that way.
And it ends with a great gag where Klinger's been trampled upon, his cigar is crushed, his paper is crumpled, and he yells, "Baker!" And that's the end of the episode. It's a great gag. It's a great way to end the episode. And so that is Nurse Doctor. Now, I mentioned earlier this was written by Cy Rosen. This is his only credit for MASH. He had a long TV career, wrote episodes for shows like Taxi, Maude, The Wonder Years, Bob Newhart. He worked on a show that I think only I remember called Open All Night, which was set in a convenience store. I think it only ran like half a season. But this is his only credit for MASH. So, I thought this was a pretty decent episode, but some people just only do one and done, and this is one and done for Cy Rosen. So Remy, do you have a favorite line or joke from this episode?
I really just love Hawkeye's incredible affront whenever he says, "You creamed weenies?" I just, Hawkeye has this beautiful obsession. He's such a foodie. The whole show, like, if he's going to rhapsodize about anything, it's going to be about food, you know? So just him being legitimately upset about this. This is the one time in the whole episode that he's actually not super congenial. And it just, I always laugh at that one. And then just, yeah, the scene in Potter's office with you stop talking about her, you stop hating her, and you stop dating her. That always, the delivery of that just cracks me up every time.
It's a great exit line for the scene. My favorite one is, and I love to clock installments of the Young Sherman Potter Chronicles, which is the prequel show that I'm working on, where we see the young Sherman Potter during World War I. And he mentions that one time in World War II, his unit was trapped in a small town in France, and the cook only had wine to cook with. And he says men were running up for an extra plate of gravy, and BJ responds with, "Gee, that was a war." And now we talked about that, like, Hawkeye isn't always so genial. Here he is. BJ is always very genial. And I love that even he's kind of like, "I don't want to hear another story about World War II." Just
No,
sarcastic.
he's had enough. Like,
Yeah.
I love when bitchy BJ comes out.
Yeah.
It's so rare, and so when it does, it just hits. Like,
It really is.
I love
Yeah.
when he gets to be awful. It's so
Yeah.
good.
Gee, that was a war. Like, all right, okay, all right. I'm gonna sit down and eat my disgusting creamed food. Thanks, Potter. It's not helping me at all. Yeah, I that just makes me laugh really hard. So, well, Remy, thank you once again for coming back. I don't always go back and listen to old episodes of MASHcast. Sometimes I do if I want to kind of like I did for you. I want to sort of prep. I'm like, oh, what was that one like? Because it's been a little while, and it was such a fun. It was so fun to listen to our show together. We had such a great time. So I was really looking forward to this. And so thank you for coming back.
Thank you so much for having me. I got so excited that I got to come back and for one of my favorite episodes of this season. It's just, I've had such a great time. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Sure. So I am a queer romance author that you can find my books at suzanneclay.com. If you're more on the fandom side, you can find me on Tumblr at Remy Fire. And yeah, those are about the only places that I live right now. So that's where you'll find me.
Okay, I will not take you to task for having multiple handles like I did on the first episode, because it took me a second. I'm like, wait, you've got an alternate handle for this name and alternate, but I get it. It's totally understandable. So
It's a
good on you. Good on you.
woman's prerogative to just change her name anytime that she would like.
As I said in the show, I should have done it when I first logged on, but I was too dumb to not use my real name, and now I'm just stuck with it. So anyway, thank you so much for coming back. I'm looking forward to having you back in later seasons, especially when you finally finish 10 and 11. I'm so dying to hear what you think about them.
I promise I will watch another season, at least one season before next year.
Season 11 is only a half season, by the way.
Oh, that's
So,
true.
you only have like 15 or 14 to go through. But yeah, again, I'm very excited I don't know that many people who don't know it chapter and verse like I do. So it's so I find it so interesting to like hear from somebody who's like, oh, I just saw this episode. Like, wow, that's amazing. So it's very, very exciting. So anyway, of course, thank you all for listening. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. You can find all the back episodes of MashCast on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, please go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Dennis Bailey, Dow Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Michael McLean, excuse me, Matt McLean, Lisa B, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Shulman, and Mike Thomas. Really appreciate the support. So we will be back next week, but until then, that is all.
Now look, folks, this is none of my affair, so why don't we keep it that way? The woman has only got a few weeks left in this man's army. A transfer would be a waste of good red tape. So here's what you're going to do. You stop talking about her. You stop hating her. And you stop dating her.